The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.
Welcome, everyone, to the Book and Film Globe podcast. I am your host, Neil Pollack, the greatest living American writer and the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We cover the worlds of books and film and streaming TV and much more, and we bring you this podcast pretty much every week. And I thank you so much for listening. And if you like this show, and I know you do, please like it wherever you're listening to it and leave us a review on Amazon or Spotify or wherever. That helps build our glorious reputation, which is only going to get bigger as the years go on. And this week's show will help add to that. I'm going to talk to contributor Greg Ford about a Netflix adaptation of Giovanni Boccaccio's The Decameron. I bet you'd never hear those words uttered together, but that is on Netflix now, and Greg has some incisive and learned thoughts about it, and some body thoughts even. Body is always good. But first, I'm going to talk to my old friend and McSweeney's running buddy, Arthur Bradford, who has of late become a documentary filmmaker, and he's made a short film that's airing on MSNBC and Peacock that is very appropriate to Book and Film Globe. It's all about school censorship and the efforts of writer Dave Eggers, another old running buddy of mine, and his efforts to get to the bottom of why school boards are censoring books, and specifically his book, The Circle. So it's a very interesting film, and I was so happy to talk to Arthur, and my conversation with him will come up right after this musical interlude. For those of you who are listening who are not familiar with the depth and breadth of my glorious career, when I call myself the greatest living American writer on this show, it's meant ironically, but there also was a time in my life where I went by that moniker professionally. I got my start as a writer, writing for a website and magazine called McSweeney's, which was started by the writer Dave Eggers, and I had a character on that website and in that magazine called Neil Pollack, the greatest living American writer. And it sticks around and it lingers. And it is relevant again this week because Dave Eggers is the featured character in a new documentary film, half-hour documentary film that is airing on MSNBC. It's called To Be Destroyed. And it is about a school district in South Dakota banning one of his books, The Circle. And Dave Eggers is not one to take such things sitting down or take such things lightly. And he took a trip to South Dakota to investigate it. And joining him on the trip was Arthur Bradford, who is a good friend of mine from back in the McSweeney's days and apparently is now a documentary filmmaker. Arthur is with me today to talk to me about To Be Destroyed. Hello, Arthur.
Hi, Neil. Good to be here.
Yes, nice to be talking to you. So now, when I last saw you in person, it was a while ago, maybe not quite 10 years ago, you were still a writer as far as I remember. I know that you've always kind of dabbled in other art forms, but you have a career as a documentary filmmaker now. I wanted to just make sure I got that right.
Yes, that's true. I guess we're going to talk about this in this podcast, but yeah, you and I kind of got started writing around the same time, but I came to the realization that I was never really going to make a living writing, and I needed to figure out something else to do. As much as I liked being a writer, I wasn't very disciplined about it. So I did documentary films of different kinds, and that's what I do now. I hardly write at all.
Well, I wish I had the courage to quit the habit. I know you made a film with Trey Parker and Matt Stone from South Park, I believe, right?
Yeah, that's kind of how I got started in all this. Is that I even when I first met you and I was writing, I had made some videos at a summer camp for people with disabilities.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And it was kind of like a side project of mine. I was making these, it was called How's Your News. It was people with disabilities doing man on the street interviews, and they were funny, but in, I believe, a nice way. And Matt and Trey really liked them. And so they offered to fund a feature film that I ended up making called How's Your News. And then later on, I did a documentary about Matt and Trey making an episode of South Park. And that's when I think became actually a real documentary filmmaker.
Oh my God. I had forgotten all about How's Your News until you mentioned, and now the theme song, which the kids, were they kids or young adults that they composed themselves. And now it's going to be running in my head, until the end of time. But let's talk about this project, because it's very relevant to the kinds of things we cover on Book and Film Globe. We do a lot of pieces about censorship, about school censorship, and about book banning. This is such a clever way, and basically undidactic way, to go about covering this issue, right? So tell us a little bit about the story, right? Rapid City, South Dakota, censored a bunch of books.
Yeah, they like a lot, you know, is the trend that I'm sure you've been covering. Shortly after the pandemic, they overhauled their school board. And with very few voters voting, they got four new school board members who were had a whole new agenda, which was mainly based on COVID, like loosening COVID restrictions. But they also had this list of books that they decided needed to be taken off the shelves of the libraries. And they hadn't read any of them or anything, but they, I think it was, there's that group Moms for Liberty, and there's a lot of groups like them that just basically disseminated a lot of information saying these books have sex scenes in them or somehow immoral. And they're kind of, the unusual thing about it was that Dave's book, The Circle, was included on that.
Right. Well, here's what I was going to say about this, right? So, like, usually when we cover these kinds of issues, like there's a up in North Texas, there's a district that is real into this. It's novels, it's graphic novels about like trans identity. You know, there's this book called Gender Queer, which has very graphic sex scenes in it. And I can see how I don't believe in banning books under any circumstances or restricting books under any circumstances, but I can see how that particular book would make a certain kind of parent feel a little squidgy. But I mean, this list in South Dakota, it's like a novel by Bernardine Evaristo, who won the Booker Prize for Girl, mm-hmm. Woman, Other. Fun Home by Alison Bechdel. The Perks of Being a Wallflower, which was made into a very popular movie. And then you got Dave Eggers. And, you know, I haven't seen or talked to Dave Eggers in a long time, but there are a few writers who are more wholesome than Dave Eggers. I mean, especially when it comes to like teenagers. I mean, he has made a career and a life's mission out of like teaching young adults how to write and read.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he it really was an odd choice. I'm sure they knew very little about Dave when they voted to get his book out of there.
Yeah. And so did you approach Dave with it? Was this his idea? Was this your idea?
It was my idea. But what I had actually approached Dave before any of this had happened. I was working with this company, and we were just looking for subjects. And I had approached Dave maybe a year before this happened, just saying, hey, if you're doing anything interesting and you're willing to let me film it, I'd be interested in doing that. That's kind of what you have to do as a documentary filmmaker. You just have to find your interesting friends and ask them if you can film them. And so we had talked about doing documentaries about a bunch of other things that had nothing to do with book banning. But because I was in close touch with him at that point, when this came up, you know, and that what really upset Dave, I should say, and this is the title of the movie is based on this, is that not only did they vote to take his book out of the curriculum, but they wanted to take all of the copies of his book and they were slated to quote be destroyed,
to be burned, and that, to be burned, basically.
Yeah,
that's what.
And that just really, like, not only is Dave super wholesome, but he's also like very, like, he does not. he does not, if he sees an injustice, he cannot let it go. Like he right. really, that really like rubbed in the wrong way. And so what he at first did was he offered, he contacted the local independent bookseller in Rapid City and just made his book available for free to any student in Rapid City who wanted it. And that opened up this line of communication where he got invited by some of the teachers in the school district to come visit their classrooms. Mm. And so when Dave accepted that invitation, that's when, and he I think just sent me a text message and said, like, would you be interested in going to South Dakota to cover this? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And so it was, we had very little preparation or anything. It was just, but because I'd been in touch with him before, it worked out.
It's so interesting to me because, you know, obviously like Dave Eggers is a very successful and famous writer, but I wouldn't say he's not exactly a camera hound. You know, there isn't a ton of footage of him, especially in the last 20 years. You know, he sort of, you know, plays behind the scenes in a lot of ways. So I just found it very interesting that like this was sort of his coming out moment. And, you know, and we have someone else on the film and I haven't seen it. I just, you know, I have some psychological issues.
Yes, I should.
Not around you, Arthur.
I know. No. I would love to talk about any of this. But you're totally right. Dave is the opposite of a camera hound. He does not like being on camera. He actively did not want to be. And whenever I talk about this film, I'm always very careful to point that out, that this was not the case of Dave Eggers like calling me up and being like, hey, you got to film this. It was it was me kind of trying to persuade him to let me film him.
It's just so opposite of the way I look at the world. Like I would let someone film me going to Trader Joe's. You know, I'd be like, yes, please put me on TV. My God.
I know. It's funny because that's the kind of person you want for a documentary. Like as a documentary filmmaker, I want someone like you who wants to be on camera, because that you need that. But I end up a lot of times working with people like Dave Eggers who don't want to be on camera, and it's the opposite. It's difficult, like Dave, but it also is, he's a very interesting guy. He's super smart and articulate. And so I do feel like my pride in this film is a lot based in the fact that I was able to get Dave and build up trust, because I think he found this particular issue so important, and he recognized that there was no way to tell the story without him. Like he definitely would have preferred to be behind the scenes. Like he wanted more shots of the kids and wanted to be a secondary character. But whenever he talks about this film, he always says it's about Rapid City and the students, and that he's a supporting character, which there's a little truth to that. Like we really worked hard to not make it. It's not a documentary about Dave Eggers.
Right. Well, he's going to be fine. You know, whether or not you can get his book in Rapid City, South Dakota, doesn't really affect his livelihood. But, you know, it's the point about these school censorship issues is that these are regular kids who are having their access to ideas and information and storytelling limited by essentially like a modern version of the moral majority, right?
Yeah, I think that's like a fair way to put it. Totally.
Again, you know, I'm sure that there are people, and you interviewed some of the people from Moms for Liberty. There are people who have good intentions. You know, I know conservatives who do not want their children looking at like Genderqueer or The Lawnmower Man or whatever that book is called, you know, books that are like have like a lot of explicit gay and trans sex in it. But the problem, and again, I'm not in favor of that kind of censorship, but the problem with like you start there and then suddenly you're banning Dave Eggers and you're banning Alison Bechdel and so on.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I mean, Dave's, so if someone listening to this hasn't read Dave's book, The Circle, it's like a modern dystopia sort of tech book. And it has one or two really awkward sex scenes in it. And they're not even that graphic. So it's just really random. Like they like to pull them out there. There may be like two or three short paragraphs where characters are having awkward sex interactions, and that's it. The book, yeah. it doesn't. So that's really random. I'll say, I do really feel there. And I, as far as my own criticisms of the film we made, I feel like I do think there is a valid discussion to be had about what can be taught in the schools. I think that there are books that, you know, like it's not that I would want to restrict all access to them, but I think you could. I don't think they necessarily need to be teaching them in school. Like, I don't think you need to have the students should not be required to read certain books that maybe they're not comfortable with. I don't think I think it works both ways. So
sure, it works both ways. And as we talk about on the site and on the show quite a bit, there are also, I mean, this is a very prominent form of censorship, but there also is a censorial attitude on the left. And, you know, yes. We've had this, this trend of bookstores taking quote unquote Zionist literature off the shelves, which we've talked about on the show before, and other instances of sort of left-wing or liberal censorship. So it's not like this is only like the evil Republican moms trying to get kids to, you know, not see themselves reflected in literature, but that's still a big part of this censorial trend in our culture. And I, you know, I'm glad you guys pointed it out. Cause it's just such a, and it must've been very cool for these kids to be able to actually meet an author like, you know, yeah. like Dave, like, you know, who is, he's a best-selling, you know, author with a lot of notches under his belt.
Yeah, it was. And that was really fun to see him, you know, he just came in to the school, the same school where his book had been pulled off the shelves. He walked in and talked to the students in their classroom. And a lot of them were kind of like, who is this guy and why is he talking to us? But the kids who knew who he was and understood the meaning of it, they were totally kind of blown away by this writer had come all the way to Rapid City to talk to them. It was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's very cool that you guys got to do it. And, you know, he's so good with kids.
Yeah, he is. You're right. Like you pointed that out. Like he starts this whole, you know, writing programs, 826 Valencia, they're all over the country. And just the suggestion that, I mean, I guess this is the thing that I learned when I was making this film is that there is a real belief in a like lots of sort of right wing communities believe that there is a left wing effort to like indoctrinate children. Like that's a thing. That's a belief that there's some sort of like cabal of left wing teachers and writers who want to recruit children to be more sexual and gender fluid and all of that. And
it's like, what are they going to all do? Take them to Comet Ping Pong and Epstein's Island? I mean, come on.
Yeah. It's that kind of thing. And I find it kind of fascinating and disturbing, but it's this belief that there is an organized effort to recruit the youth of America into this new lifestyle. And I don't really,
it's not new.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, exactly. It's not new, but so all of these efforts to restrict books and all that, they see it as a reaction, like a defense against a change that they need to combat or something.
Yeah. I mean, you and I both know that most writers are, you know, vote Democrat and are raging liberals, but it's not like there's nothing organized. You can't organize writers. Not really.
Yeah, there's a moment in the film that I really like where I asked one of the teachers. I said, "What do you say to parents that say that you're trying to indoctrinate their children?" And the teacher, he says, "You know, I don't have time to indoctrinate kids. Like, if I was able to indoctrinate kids and get them to do what I want, I would get them to wear deodorant every day and turn in their homework in time. Like, that's right. what I that's if I had that kind of influence, that's what I would do.
Right. If only we had the power.
Yeah.
All right. Exactly. Well, okay. So To Be Destroyed, about the attempts to censor Dave Eggers in South Dakota. Boy, they picked the wrong writer to try to censor. Yeah. Let me tell you, Arthur Bradford is the director of that, and it premieres. It will have premiered by the time you listen to this on MSNBC in the States. Are they going to air it more than once?
I don't know. I know that it will be available online on Peacock. So if you want to see it that way, it's just a half hour long, and yeah,
It's on Peacock and is on MSNBC, starting August 11th and maybe again. And it is out there now. This has been documented. And, Arthur, thank you for fighting the good fight. One last question. Did Dave ask how I was doing?
You know, I think we did talk. I'm not even kidding. I was hoping we were going to talk more about this on the podcast, by the way.
We
I love getting together. Like, Neil, you and I, like, we were part of this McSweeney's thing that happened in the late 90s and early 2000s. And so I love reminiscing with Dave about that stuff. So we went down our list of, like, you know, how's Hodgman doing? How's Zadie Smith and all these people that I haven't seen in years, but I met through Dave. And I believe that I told him, I was like, hey, I see Neil. I didn't really realize that it's like, you guys, is there actually like bad blood between you guys? Like,
I don't know. Who knows? Probably okay. Not. I'm sure. I mean, in my mind, yes, but I'm sure in his mind, there's not. I don't know. I mean, I wrote something in the New York Times, about sort of giving up my literary persona, years and years ago. And he wasn't too thrilled about it, but, I don't know. I was doing a lot of drugs back then, Arthur.
As was I. You know? I honestly believe that Dave is like, he's very, very sensitive and about, you know, anything that gets said about him.
No, I know.
And I think, and so he probably was upset then, but I bet he's not anymore.
I've learned to keep my mouth shut over the years. It took me a few decades, but I figured it out. Well, my first author published by McSweeney's.
Yeah, you were.
The Neil Pollack Anthology of American Literature, and its 25th anniversary of publication is next year. So I don't know. I've kind of thought about maybe extending a hey to Dave and saying, man, let's do a little show or something.
I would love to. I still to this day thought those original shows that you and Dave and me and others were like highly entertaining as a reader. Like
I had my moments. And I'm still ambulatory. You know what I mean? I'm not retired yet. So, yeah, maybe I'll, I don't know. Maybe I'll approach him. I'm not, you know, I have other things going on, but I think it would be cool to, just kind of get the gang back together, you know, do a couple of shows, do a show in New York.
I totally agree with that. I would love to to me, that would be a dream to get the gang back together. And I want to say, like, just, since we're talking, I really want you to write about your poker playing experiences. I feel like that's going to be the book that breaks you out again. Once again,
it's in the works.
I think you're very entertaining when you write about your like strange adventures. Yeah.
My hobbies. Yeah, no, I played in the World Series of Poker this summer. You know, mostly, honestly, my time at the World Series of Poker involved me just kind of like wandering around the hotel, scrounging for food that wasn't too expensive, when I wasn't playing, but yeah, I'm pretty obsessed with it. So I'm working on a book.
Yeah, you should.
All right. Arthur Bradford, To Be Destroyed on MSNBC and Peacock now. Thank you so much for stopping by for a little rocking chair reminiscence.
Yeah. Good to talk to you.
Welcome to Villa Santa.
We're here to eat and drink and move into a bright new future.
Have you been gutting fish, Senora? You're covered in fish cottage.
Am I?
Oh!
I've been having sinful thoughts.
Whatever happened to modesty?
Excuse me for saying so, but you are deliciously round on my knee.
I am plumper than my dress conveys.
Pour wine, m'lady.
What did you say?
Pour wine.
There's a strange new literary adaptation currently airing on Netflix. It debuted this month. It is an 8-part miniseries event based on Giovanni Boccaccio's The Decameron. And if you thought that was an unadaptable project, well, you're probably right, but they did it anyway. They made a Decameron show, and it's a very, very strange, it's a comedy. It's a very strange comedy. The whole existence of this thing just makes very little sense to me. So I decided to bring in our contributor who I figured had the best chance of actually having read and thought about The Decameron, and that is Greg Ford, and he's here today to talk to me about it. Hello.
Hi, Neil. How's it going?
It's going well. I apologize for you hadn't, you'd seen tell of The Decameron.
Yes, I knew that the show existed, but I didn't have high hopes for the series, so I just...
You said you just ignored it and watched something else until I came a calling.
That's right. I mean, I read The Decameron back in college quite some time ago and have, you know, picked up the book here and there since then just to read the odd story from it.
Well, that makes one of us.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, my... impression of The Decameron was always that it was kind of like an Italian Black Plague version of the Canterbury Tales, right?
Yes, I mean, that's very apt. Chaucer probably was familiar with The Decameron. It's episodic. It's all these nobles decamping from Florence to a secluded villa, pretty much fortified, where they can hide out from the ravages of the Black Plague. And in order to pass the time over, I believe, the course of 10 days, hence the Decameron, they tell each other stories. And each day, one of them, there are five men and five women, is either the king or the queen of the day. And that person chooses the theme for their stories, and each of them tells a story. So I believe 100 stories over the course of the 10 days. And the book is either famous or notorious, depending on your audience, I suppose, for being anti-clerical and bawdy.
Right. The TV adaptation of The Decameron is certainly bawdy. You can't deny that. I mean, anti-clerical doesn't really apply, since it kind of just felt to me like off-brand community theater Monty Python in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they took Boccaccio's title and did their own thing with it.
Yeah.
There's one episode where the lady of the house proposes that they all tell each other stories on the theme of purity, but that all gets shut down because nobody in the house gets along, and the scene descends into bickering, and that's the last we ever see of anybody telling each other stories. It's just all these folks, 10 of them, but it's, I believe, I mean, the ratio is off, something like 7 women and 3 men, or is it the other way around?
It struck me that the cast was very female heavy. I wasn't counting per se.
Yeah, but it's something like that. Yeah. In any case, it's not the same as in the book, but they're all just there. They don't much like each other. Their various power struggles, what with a lady and, a maid servant showing up.
Pretending to be her lady.
Yeah, that's right.
But her attempts to kill the lady were not successful. And then at the end of episode 1, the lady shows up.
That's right. So it's all these people just behaving badly in a more or less generic medieval romp. And as you said, sort of off-brand Python, you know, with lots of pustule-ridden corpses, just so you know that, well, there is a plague going on here.
Well, so here's what I thought. Like, I watched that first episode, right? And for about the first 20, 25 minutes, I was pretty amused. I was pretty invested in the characters. And then I started looking at my phone, like, what time is it? You know, how many minutes is this going to go on? You know, those episodes are long.
Yeah, well, I mean, about an hour for that sort of a show does seem long. I mean, that first episode, I paused about halfway through to see how much was longer, and I just sighed. It
was it was too long. It was. I felt like, you know, it could have been if it had been half the length, it might have worked. You know, because it's not like they don't have good comic actors in it. I mean, you've got Tony Hale, you've got Cersei Monica Jackson from Derry Girls.
Tanya Reynolds as the impersonator of a servant. She is brilliant. I love her, and I don't know what I've ever seen her in before. She's very familiar. I should have looked her up before we did this this conversation. But she anchors the show. She's the only really sympathetic character. Even, of course, you know, she's up to all sorts of devious crap. But you like her. Yeah. Unlike the rest of them, who are just irritating.
Yeah, she's very good. All right, so we have that to say. It's too much. I kind of feel like this is a reaction show to COVID.
It is.
It's a plague comedy, essentially. And we have just come out of a pandemic, which was not the bubonic plague by any stretch of anybody's imagination, despite what the fever dreams of some people might have thought. But you're not going to be able to do a comedy about rich hypocrites dodging COVID like you're able to do this, right?
No, that's right. It's a way of talking about it without talking about it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I feel is going on here. Unfortunately, it's a weird genre of show. Like, what are we doing here?
Well, they're trying to be topical without being too topical. And then they're also trying to make this sort of edgy humor by being dirty but frankly, they're nowhere near as dirty as Boccaccio.
Yeah, you mentioned that in your piece.
Yeah, I mean, Boccaccio is he's filthy. I mean, the one story about putting the devil back in hell, which you folks can look that one up for yourselves. But that one, in its first English translations, they pretty much didn't translate. They just gave you a very broad outline, and they didn't talk about the sex stuff, because mm-hmm. that's pretty much all it is.
And do you find the sex stuff in modern translations?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you pick up the Penguin edition, yeah. It's all in there.
And it's graphically described? It's not implied.
I mean, you know, he uses his euphemisms, but you know what's going on. It's, you know, he's writing in the 1300s, so it's not
50 Shades of Grey.
No, you know, I was going to say it's not Penthouse Forum.
All right, and I mean, I don't know how deep you got into the TV show, but you had more episodes than I did.
I watched the first two all the way through, and then I skimmed through three and four, stopping at each scene to make sure I knew what was going on. But that's as far as I got. I was just exhausted by all of that. It was just too much for me, or too little, as the case may be. I just wanted some meat. There wasn't enough to it. It was just these people running around acting like, I don't know, idiots.
Yeah, I guess for me it was just, it was too long and not quite enough. I didn't hate it as much as you did, but I also did not find myself drawn back to the material, and that's kind of a bad sign. If I really like have no desire to watch the second episode of something.
No, and it's a shame. Like I said, they've got a solid cast, and I mean, they didn't have to do something quite so episodic as the book, but they could have really made more of an effort to base it on the book.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how they would have done that, but they could have done something.
That's not our job to know how they would have done that. I feel like that's a reasonable critique. And when they make the wacky body British medieval Canterbury Tales show next year, I'll bring you back, and we can pick that one apart too.
Well, it's longer since I've read that one. Yeah, so.
But I actually did read that one. Maybe I'll write that review. All right. Well, Greg Ford, thank you for enduring some. Not all of the Decameron. You endured. I'd say, what would you call the Quatramaran? You watched
something like
four episodes of it, and Greg wrote about it in a book in Film Globe, and you can read his piece now. Thanks a lot. All right, thank you so much, Greg Ford. The Decameron is now on Netflix, and also thanks to my special guest Arthur Bradford, whose movie To Be Destroyed, short documentary film, is airing on MSNBC and Peacock and couldn't be more timely and appropriate. I am Neil Pollack. I am the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. I am the host of this podcast, and when you're done listening to this episode, I'm hypnotizing you now. You will go and leave a positive review, a 5-star review of this show wherever you listen to it. I thank you for listening. I thank you for your support, and I will talk to you soon.
Original production. The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with 2 locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at the Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's the Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.